It's April 25th. Welcome back to Oh, I Love That Too, your weekly podcast where we dig into TV, movies, and digital media, pretty much all the things we love. I'm one of your hosts, Amara, and I'm here today with my fantastic co-host, Dania.
Hello.
And today we're talking about the strange, the weird, and the oddball, the stuff we're into that's a little unexpected, a little strange, and we're kind of happy about it. So, Dania, what you got?
So this was like when you sent me this idea, I was like so into it. I think that there's such weird corners, especially to the internet, of these weird like little clips and creepy childhood like shows that you look at and you're like, oh, that definitely should not have been shown to kids. The first thing I thought of when I heard it was Salad Fingers. And if you don't know what Salad Fingers is, it's both fantastic and terrifying.
Does this have to do with the new romaine lettuce concerns?
No. Salad Fingers is from like 2007 or 2008. And it was like a little cartoon. And it's this weird, he almost looks like E.T., but he has salad for his fingers. And he's obsessed with like a rusty spoon.
Oh my gosh.
This sounds really weird.
How do you always find my nightmares? We're not even like a minute into this.
No, literally, it's one of those where you're watching it and you're like, I really shouldn't enjoy this. Like, this should be like, alarm bells should really be going off in my head right now, and they're not.
Oh no.
It's fantastic. So that was my first one that literally, like, the minute you said that, I was like, yep. This is something that needs to be talked about. And there's only like a couple episodes of it. I don't even remember. I remember hearing it in high school, and I don't remember if it's online or if it was like an actual show. I'm pretty sure it's online, but yeah, it just has like the most cringy sound effects and like, oh my God, it's amazing. It's just glorious. You're going to watch it and then we'll comment on our Instagram. You got to do a video of you watching Salad Fingers on our Instagram.
That sounds so disturbing. I'll very much, I will end up seeing this just because that will happen. because that's inevitable here.
Yes.
So I'm really, what about you? I'm really quickly looking up a name because you were talking about YouTube shows. I wanted to bring up a show by, I had to look up who the comedian is because I don't want to missay this. I love a show that I actually stumbled into recently that's super strange. That's was a big internet like cult phenomenon on via YouTube by a comedian named Chris Fleming called Gale. Have you ever seen this?
Yes. Oh my God, I love it.
I have not binge watched something in quite some time, but I got into this whole Gale thing. I think really there's problematic elements of it and all that stuff, but like there's really, I think the thing that is most interesting to me about that piece as a comedy piece is that it comes from an obvious like love-hate situation with somebody who's presenting as kind of like an alpha mother. So the idea here is Gail is, she's got to be from New England. That's almost for sure. It's this character that Chris does where he's being Gail, this dissatisfied, ultra productive housewife who is, she just takes everything too far. Like, you know, at some point she gets into a competition about like whose brownies are the crunchiest and she starts using gravel because she has to win. And there's this ongoing like sense of competition that's completely irrational. And as somebody who's so about being from the Pacific Northwest, at one point she has a neighbor or someone moves in from somewhere else and she keeps accusing them of being from Seattle when they're from like somewhere totally far away because her sense is anywhere that's not New England is that it's other, it's strange. It's pretty funny show, something worth checking out and definitely something to check out in terms of understanding kind of how comedy has processed through the internet. I think that was a really fun piece of it as I was like, oh, this is sort of dated, but it's dated in a way that is still somewhat funny. And now this guy does like great comedy circuits and I look forward to the next time he comes through my city. So
And he's the one that does, like, where she's cleaning the house and she's like, just throw it away. Just throw it away. Right. Is that Gail?
She has...
She's like, guests are coming over and she's like freaking out.
I think it is. It's like if someone was about to have an anxiety attack constantly. And I say that with like, no, with total like respect and concern for people who have anxiety issues. But like, this is all just hyperbole and it's so funny. It's so incredibly funny.
Like that line in Ferris Bueller where he says, like, if you stick a lump of coal up his butt in 2 weeks, mm-hmm. you'd have a diamond. Mm-hmm. Like, it is. It's one of those, like, that we all know that one type A person that's just so, like, rigid. And, you know, that's amazing. I love, for so long, like, the internet comedian corner was, like, now it's really mainstream. But, like, at one point, they were just putting stuff up to put stuff up because they enjoyed it.
Right.
The comedians in general. And you can find some really, really, I dare say, vintage, like, but like gems. Awesome vintage.
Vintage
YouTube stuff. Yeah. I know. Isn't that crazy?
It is pretty wild. But we are getting there. And I think that especially when you go digging around in the archives of YouTube space and things that have been popular over time, in addition to discovering these gems, you kind of get a sense for the evolution of culture across YouTube, which is a huge discussion, which again, at some point we're going to do a big like YouTube something or other. But I think that is something that's really super cool to see. The parts of YouTube that were about experimentation and continue to be about experimentation today in a place like comedy, it's cool to have a place where you can prop yourself up and maybe get some views when you try something silly. And that's like,
exactly.
Comedy takes a step of fearlessness, and as does all art really. So I think that's super cool.
Well, and I think also, like, something that is really cool about the weird, kitschy little stuff is that you're able to almost let go of, nowadays, all of us expect such a high caliber of media. Mm-hmm. We expect that perfect lighting and the beautiful camera angles because that's what we're used to. And when it's something that is, like, the dark corner or, like, a funny video or something that you wouldn't expect, you almost are able to suspend your belief when it comes to the caliber of what you expect. So maybe the camera isn't great or, you know, the sets aren't amazing, but it's this truly, like, you would connect to this, like we were talking, the plot and the character and all of those things. And you almost like forgive the other stuff, you know, for the comedy and for the actual content. And I think that's what made the internet so amazing in like 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010.
I mean,
was people were just making it happen, you know?
100%. People, there's a general kind of theory of YouTube that is like content wins, right? Content wins over production value, over what you have, over lighting, over honestly, over sound problems if it's good enough, over everything. And that is totally and completely true. And part of the reason it's true is because if you can find that nugget of what is actually authentic, not like the buzzword authenticity, but what is actually true human storytelling that exists within those things, you've bypassed a lot of that other stuff. Sure, it would be better if the graphics were better. It would be better if all of these things were professional. And those people who are good at that, they evolve into that. But the story is what matters, right? You don't remember how high def something was in your heart. You remember how you felt about it.
Well, and I think also, like, you look at YouTubers. In the beginning, we all started in front of our, you know, our cell phone or our laptop or whatever. Whether or not we posted that, you know what I mean? I have videos that I should not ever let see the light of day. Yeah. But you have to start somewhere. And I think, you know, the reason that YouTube is such a phenomenon is it's putting people in front of a camera and you actually walk away from it feeling like they're your friend. It's like this really intimate interaction, even though they have no idea who you are and they've never, like, it's this weird one-sided relationship. So
totally,
it's cool. But yeah, what's another, like, weird little
out there
nugget
kind
that
of
you watch?
Strange thing. So yeah, the whole concept of this is like kitsch and outball and other oddball and other
welcome to outball.
Sounds like some sort of like Ben Stiller sports, like the second dodgeball movie or whatever. Was there a second one? I don't know. Anyway, I know. That was kind of a strange film. But
if you could dodge a wrench, you could dodge a ball.
One of the ones that I thought of is that I really tend to like TV shows that are just a little off-center that people, a lot of people have seen, but they're never really acknowledging them until they find another like person. So one of the films that's like that for me is Weird Science. That's a film I think a lot of people have seen and like, but it's a film that people don't go, oh, I really enjoy watching Weird Science because it's so bizarre. It's such a strange film. Now, it's an 80s film. It's an old John Hughes film. It's John Hughes in the other direction. Lots of people know Breakfast Club. Some people know Pretty mm-hmm. in Pink. But there's, like, this whole other side of John Hughes' world, which is mm-hmm. super stranger, a little more DIY, a little more, like, trying things out. And I think that Weird Science is really the one that had the budget to do something super weird in the 80s. It's all about these two boys who basically, they're computer kids. It's the 80s. Their computer's gigantic. It's the 80s. And they decide they're going to build the perfect woman by, you know, putting pieces of things into magazines and stuff into their computer. It's this really advanced understanding of technology, you guys. And basically out pops. And what ends up happening is lightning strikes the house and it works. And then they have to deal with this, like, supermodel, who was a woman who was an actual model during the time. But moreover, it's a story about them evolving and these really strange moments that happen to them. It's a bizarre movie. It has Anthony Michael Hall, a very young Anthony Michael Hall, is in that movie. It had the gentleman who just died recently, who was on, was it Big Love?
Seymour Hoffman?
No. What is his name?
Paxton. Bill Paxton.
Yeah, Bill Paxton was in that. He played my favorite villain role of all time of Bill Paxton's is that one.
Totally did not make that reference in my brain.
I'm like, now every time you say really, I'm like, is it Bill Paxton? I have to look it up.
No, I believe you. I just never, because now that I hear it, I think, and you guys are hearing me type because I'm looking.
You're hearing both of us type because I'm like, is it Bill? It is Bill Paxton. Okay, phew. It is Bill Paxton.
Yeah, it's totally Bill Paxton. I never, ever, ever would have placed that.
Because
he looks so different, too.
I find him, I've always, I say this as somebody who recognizes he was like a beloved Hollywood actor, just so people know. He was like one of those guys who did like the good networking and was really good to his coworkers. Mm-hmm. And that's like a story that is told about him within media. So that's like amazing. And mm-hmm. we need more of that. But he also,
I love hearing those.
He played like the worst characters. These people that I found not just like upsetting, but like fully just no. I mean, I remember watching parts of Big Love and just being like, no! Like, yeah, no, this whole thing is the worst. And
that was another one.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, and so
that was another show that I really 100%. Got into.
Go there.
I liked Weird Science.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Like, it's not something that I'm like, oh, guys, I have 2 extra hours. Let's pop in Weird Science. But, like, I appreciate it for what it is, mm-hmm. and I liked it. I felt like, you know, it was something, it was the first of its kind, and then they definitely, like, continued to remake it
mm-hmm.
in different forms throughout the years.
They turned it into a TV show at one point, and all kinds of other, like, weirder things.
Well, and then you also had, like, you know, girl and her Barbie turns to life, and had, like, all, you know, they definitely, like, stretched that storyline. But yeah, as far as Big Love, like, I really felt like that was kind of like a weird corner. When that first came out, people were like, wait a minute, you're making a movie about it's not even polyamory, mm-hmm. it's polygamy.
Right.
And so,
and in a like weird, weird and in, like, in a strange way for that world too. It was it's a strange show. Yeah.
It is, but I kind of dug it. I really liked it. I didn't watch the whole thing, but I might go back and watch it. So mine is taking like a really hard turn into real weird.
Mm-hmm.
For a long time, I was like really into watching videos online of hippos eating watermelon.
Oh, if you could find one where a hippo was eating a square pizza with a DVD in it, we'd be good to go.
No, but honestly, have you ever seen a hippo eat a watermelon?
I'm going to blow your mind here, Dania.
It's mesmerizing.
I've seen that IRL.
It's mesmerizing.
There's this time
and literally, like, I literally had probably a solid, like, 3 or 4 weeks where I was like, actively searching out videos of hippos eating watermelon.
I'm laughing just, like, at you, but, like, I think we all, if we're really honest with ourselves, have, like, the internet provides animal moments that are wonderful.
Yes.
And I yes. have definitely, one that is definitive for me, like, cat videos are somewhat infamously this way. When I went to Rabbit Island, that was, like, I got there because I'd watched so many videos about Rabbit Island. The one that really sticks out for me whenever this happens is there's this one where this guy has, like, an entire whipped cream container, like a Cool Whip container of sugar gliders.
Okay.
He opens it and they, like, all look out at the same time, like, what did you do? You disrupted our, like, wonderful snoozing cozy space. And I love that. So, like, when I
yeah,
that's my, you guys should look those things up if you having a bad day. May we recommend both hippos eating watermelons and sugar gliders.
We'll share both of them. Yeah, we'll share both those videos on our Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like,
literally, like, they put the whole watermelon in their mouth and then they close it. And honestly, like, I'm not gonna lie, like, it's slow-mo needs to happen, like, 190 frames per second, like, real buttery slow-mo.
You know what they need to have is, like, a show where it's a cinematographer's journey and he's like, he's here to shoot something yes. amazing, like a slow run, and then it's like this super, like, slow-mo. It's like the slow-mo guys.
Whoa.
The slow-mo guys should do an animal series. Oh my gosh,
seriously,
they should do that.
And so basically I went through this phase. I watched, you know, all of these videos, and there's quite a few of them out there. It's not just one video. And I was, like, sending it to my friends, like, ha ha ha, this is amazing. And they were like, please stop talking to me. And
unfriended.
So the other day I'm on HQ, and they asked a question of which animal has the largest mouth, and my brain immediately went to hippos with watermelons. And I got the question right, and they played the hippo with the watermelon as the answer.
Gratifying.
It was a moment of validation. Super gratifying.
I like it. It's super weird. I'm really on board with that.
Have you seen the new video going around with the pug in the Happy Meal box?
No.
It's, like, the best Happy Meal toy ever, and they, like, open this Happy Meal box, and this pug's head just goes, beep!
No, I will have to look that up, though. That sounds adorable. And
again, we will share this on our Facebook.
Yeah, I'm excited about sharing all of these links for you guys. So, getting back into other media, because she and I could talk about some weird YouTube. Don't worry about that. Here's something that's kind of in the middle ground. It was a BBC show. So, one of the places that I like to dabble in things that I don't think necessarily everybody does is in BBC TV shows. So TV shows from the UK, from England, usually in England. And one that I was into that was really kind of obscure, even among those things, was a show called Japanorama that was hosted by Jonathan Ross. Jonathan Ross is a big name in media in the UK. He's had a lot of, like, game shows that he's been part of. He's been part of a lot of TV shows. He did, like, actual reporting at one point, and now he's, like, if you watch Top Gear, he's got kind of, like, Jeremy Clarkson level kind of fame. He's just a person who, oh, he was in the Spice Girls movie briefly.
Who was he?
I think he was himself. I think he was Jonathan Ross, the reporter. I'm sorry to say, Dania, you're gonna be very sad. I don't know that much about the Spice Girls movie. I've seen it
unacceptable
twice. Because, you know.
You call yourself a media. I have it on VHS if you would like me to send it to you.
I may have a copy of it. That sounds like a thing a friend of mine would have been like, hey, look, a copy of Spice Girls. This will be a funny thing to give Amara.
Yeah, literally. Well, and, like, the little, it was such a bizarre movie. That is one of the little corners of the world that I think way too many of us have seen.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, they met aliens at one point in that movie. Like,
it was super bizarre.
They got gorped by aliens at one point. Yeah.
It was a super strange, strange film.
But they had a sick bus. Hashtag
they
van
did.
Life.
They did
had, like,
have
a spiral,
like,
staircase in their double decker.
Yeah, that was cool.
On it.
I think one of the things the Spice Girls always did well was make a statement.
Yes.
Like,
love it.
Not subtle. Anyway. Not subtle branding. True facts. There was no hashtag back then, but it would have been like,
yes,
hashtag girl power, hashtag not subtle. So,
seriously.
Other things that are kind of... So, anyway, Japanorama, the TV show specifically, I did want to bring up, especially for people who are really interested in Japanese pop culture, which is ever, you know, kind of flowing into our society right now. Jonathan Ross is special in that he does a show where he's obviously actually a little bit educated in the culture itself. And moreover, because of the level of professionalism he's had as a reporter, he actually talks to people in Japan who are like pivotal points in all of these culture things. And each episode's like a retrospective. Cool. So like one's about anime, one's about, I remember watching one, I want to say that was about like sneaker culture at one point. He goes into these like very kind of niche-y subculture things and talks to the people who matter there and has like interesting human conversations with them that are really like really one-to-one. When I say human, they're like really interactively one-to-one. And I just thought it was a great show as a culture study show. I watch a lot of travel television and I felt like that was really something special there and super fun for anyone.
Is it still on?
I think it was like six. It was a tiny little run episoded thing. And it also had really weird, like, it would have like cut ins of like strange art. It was really like artistically done. It felt like nothing else, which is why once I saw one episode of it, I started digging for the rest of them because I was like, oh, this is different.
Yeah.
Which is something I'm always, you know.
I dig it.
I dig it too.
Yeah. Well, and I think as media kind of builds out, like when you think about it, you know, in the 80s. And I know this is like a big hot topic right now of like, you know, the internet's open to everyone and it's open source and you can enjoy, you know, it's very democratic. If people like your stuff, they watch your stuff. If they don't like your stuff, you're never going to make it. Mm-hmm. There's not some gatekeeper telling you like, oh, I don't like you, so you're not going to ever be on TV.
Right.
Like, but when you think about it, that's true. There is so much... Like, as the floodgates open, people are able to create all of those things that in the past the world said, no, you can't do that, or no, that's not ready. And there's an audience for it, which is amazing.
I think.
And the whole, you know, topic of like 1,000 true fans and all of that whole thing. But I think also what that's doing is it's diluting the market a lot. It used to be that you'd sit down with a studio exec and they'd say, okay, well, we have a superhero movie coming out in June. So your movie about X, Y, and Z, if it's anything to do with superhero, needs to come out in August. Mm-hmm. Like they would like tweak the scheduling. And now it's like, no, just get it out and put out as much as you can. And I think that, you know, on one hand, that's awesome. But on the other hand, that can be really damaging because you're not getting the creativity and the wide range. So when people find something that is really kitschy or speaks to them in a, I'm the first one to admit, like, if I find something that surprises me, like, I'm on board. I am like, choo-choo, here's the train, let's go. And so, you know what I mean, though?
Yeah.
Like, it's so rare to find something that you're not, that you haven't seen before. So I think that when, like you're saying, with that TV show in Japan, like, finding something that you're like, this is new, I think we have so much more access to seek those things out now.
100%.
And that's exciting.
I think that's one of my big draws to digital life and digital culture also. You know, there's the culture exchange element of it, but there's also the, like, accessibility issue. I would never have stumbled into... I mean, you've got to think about how the probability was to find your weird niche stuff before, right? If it was about another culture, you had to import it. You had to go through some sort of channels to get it to you. If it was in another language, then you had to figure out how you could get it, like, language decompressed. And then you had to find culture context, and you'd have to research all of those things. And nowadays, a lot of that is presented to you on a platter. Now, that I think the danger is kind of what you alluded to there. When everything's presented to you like that, one, it's moving so fast, is anybody checking it, right? Is anybody making sure that you're projecting things in a way that is actually true or is has been
That's
vetted?
That's like a whole
it's like a
conversation.
Whole thing, you know, it's like when people get into whether or not they like Wikipedia. You're like, okay, yeah. But
well, and there's valid points on both sides of that.
Oh, definitely.
Ooh, I just made a big noise. Sorry, guys. But, you know, there's valid points, but I think the more accessibility you have, the more you have to actually utilize those channels to maintain an educated point of view and to maintain, you know, like you're saying, something where, you know, you're not projecting or appropriating or doing things like that. And it's so easy when we have the world at our feet to like do something. And then all of a sudden, you know, as fast as the internet's moving, the internet is forever. Things do not come down.
Right.
So I think it's really easy to like, you see all this stuff where people act and then they have to like, you know, people are posts from 2008
right.
and you're like, oh, wow.
Or they have to justify something they did in the past in a way that you never probably would have gotten caught doing before, which doesn't necessarily lead to people having space for the growth that is naturally part of the process. So I guess a little side piece of this is with if you enjoy stuff that's kind of strange and out there, you also have to be a person that puts situations you run into in context and brings like perspective and says to you before you judge something, you kind of have to say to yourself, am I making a snap judgment or is this a judgment that's, you know, that's kind of validated? So yeah, that's a deep unexpected end of the weirdness spectrum, but yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Well, and I also think that on some level, like the internet's permanence as the whole, like we're seeing like Me Too and all of these different, like, we're really as a culture realizing the power of unifying on the internet. But I think on the flip side of that is people have become, you know, they had the whole like PC push where the world was like, well, you need to speak this way and act this way and do this, otherwise you're going to offend people. Now we have this whole like, people, I think the internet's permanence is inhibiting people's creativity to an extent because you don't like, it's all about like, okay, so I'm going to post this today, but I also not only can think about it as today, I have to think about it in 5 years when my brand has pivoted or when I'm no longer 13. And I think, you know, it does, it creates kind of this, you second guess where, you know, maybe it stifles a little creativity or you brand it in a way that you know an audience is going to be there or there's like all of those things. So it's really refreshing when you find something that they're like, nope, I like it. It's going up.
Yeah, I think there's
no inhibition.
There's a complicated, especially these are discussions that comedians have a lot because like, what can you make fun of without stepping on toes? Can you make fun of things without stepping on toes? Is it important? Here's a comedian concern. Is it important to step on toes to highlight things that need to be brought up in a satirical fashion as comedy historically comes out of that kind of ground? The goal of putting a spotlight onto something in a way that's digestible that needs to be discussed in culture. And this is very high level, complicated kind of like discussion points in comedy, in the study of English, in the study of these things. But I think discussions need to keep happening. I think that's really where we're at right now.
Yeah.
And people need to kind of make decisions for themselves about where those lines are and where they need to be and listen to the people that are around you about how those decisions impact them. And, you know, be culturally as sensitive as you can be while still learning.
Well, and that's the thing. I think that there is a place, I think if, and this could just be my perspective, so I'm going to preface that this is like my individual perspective. I have my own, you know, privileges. But I think when you show up to a situation or a conversation with an open mind and knowing that you have, you know, a couple years ago, it was very big to say, like, check your privilege. Like, that statement was very around in the culture. And, you know, I think if you can show up to a conversation knowing that you don't know everything and that you have the opportunity to learn, it shifts kind of how you approach situations. It shifts how you create and how you, it's not saying that you're not going to say something stupid or you're not going to like make a mistake, but I think just the fact that you step up to a conversation and you say, okay, I'm ready to learn, teach me what I don't know and I can teach you what you don't know. And that perspective shift. And I think, like you said, comedy is really rooted out of that. Comedy is, you know, making people uncomfortable. And I think we could, as a culture, use a whole hell of a lot more comfort. And I'm sorry, I swore. I'll leave it. We're working on Dania's
her swearsies, choice of words. Her swearsy space.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think this is well-trodden ground. And to be honest, if this is stuff you're really interested in, you guys, there are probably many, I know there are, because I've sat through like proxy discussions about this. There are podcasts that dig into these kinds of cultural issues as
well. Oh, absolutely. In a direction way more educated.
That are people who, like, their world, their degrees, everything is about this discussion. Yeah. And I would
we don't know that.
I would push you to that place. I mean, I would push you to, you know, whenever you can, if you're trying to educate yourself, find experts in those fields. So
we're here to talk about
weird stuff. So we're gonna kind of go back to that. So let's talk about something else that's real weird. Do you have somebody or an actor maybe or someone like that that resonates as kind of a strange thing that you dig? Because I was thinking about one that this is where she's going to start making fun of me. I just know it. I just know it before I say it.
Bring it on. I've been feeling feisty today.
I know it's been in the cards. So I was looking through, I started looking around for strange, sort of odd things that I have enjoyed over time or a thing
Please
that I got
do
kind
do
of
not
focused.
Say Pee Wee Herman.
No.
I'm just like waiting for you to like bust out Pee Wee's front house
Pee-wee's
or whatever
playhouse.
It was.
No, that was a long time ago. No, I was specifically going to bring up Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Oh, I'm not going to make fun of you for that.
Okay, well, because
I was a fan of The Client List. I watched all three seasons.
I should have seen that coming. No, the Jennifer Love Hewitt that I'm specifically talking about is the weird. It's the weird. Like almost made for TV movies. What are those? The movies that are not made for TV but have a little bit more budget, but just don't
movie of the week.
Don't manage to get anywhere. Is that what they are? The movie of the week thing? She did one
kind of.
That was based on a book, I wanna say, called Confessions of a Sociopathic Social Climber.
I totally saw that.
What?
And I kinda dug it.
What a strange mid-level funded project that was. And that's something I like sometimes is like finding a movie or a TV show that, man, that's it's almost in that space between being a movie and a TV episode. You can't really figure it out, but you're not on Lifetime. You're not on one of those places. And you're like, how did this thing happen? What is this? What do we call this media piece? Anyway, Confessions of a Sociopathic Social Climber, which I'm going to call Confessions from now on because that is a lot to say. It was a strange little film about a gal who's trying to make her way, who's made her way up to the top of the advertising chain by lying about who she is and her.
I totally forgot about sense. This.
And that is like one of my special skills is like, I remember a thing you forgot.
Oh my God. I love it. It's like straight up. I remember this. And she wore all the low cut shirts and she had the awful side pony for like half of the movie.
Yeah.
And she was like trying to flirt with her boss and he wasn't like, having it. Oh my God. I remember this.
There was so much that was going on there, but really it's, and I mean, we talked about in a previous episode, we talked about things that are plot thin. this is a pretty plot thin movie. She shows up and basically she's doing things like on the street buying off product bags. She's buying like repo bags and stuff and it's horrible. And then spoilers, she gets caught pretending to be this wealthy, crazy, rich, well put together socialite, and in reality, she's a person who marketed herself really well.
Which I honestly think is great.
Yeah, no, I do too.
You know, it was a movie of its time,
mm-hmm.
definitely, mm-hmm. in the sense of, like, she was doing what every, you know, person nowadays does. She was working on that personal brand. But, yeah, it was a great movie. I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, and I tend to, on a broader scale, I kind of tend to dig these little, like, movies that just, they pop up out of nowhere. Netflix has kind of taken a little swing at some of these kinds of movies, too. And I'm willing to bet, without knowing this, you'd know more about the numerics and stuff, that they have less budget. And they have like scrappy put it together crew and probably pretty thin timelines, and they create stories that are super digestible. But I tend to totally dig them. I'm comfortable with it, and I'm, you know, aware of the fact that they are not cinema gold. But
I take the opposite approach. Like I enjoy the occasional rom-com, mm-hmm. but Netflix also brings about these like really same. Scrappy budget, you know, like scrap, you know, they put it together DIY, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it's these really like dark kind mm-hmm. of almost. There's one on Netflix called Pretty Ugly People,
mm.
and I don't think it was Netflix based originally, but it's basically, the plot is this girl who was very overweight in college and had this group of, like, pretty people friends. And Melissa McCarthy's in it. Mm. And the woman that... It's got a decent cast. It's got a really good cast. Octavia Spencer is in it. It's, like, a good cast. And the guy that played Mosby in Zack and Cody, like, the guy that ran the hotel. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Was it Mosby? I think it was. But anyway, he was in it. Great cast. Decent plot. And essentially, she calls her friends and says, I'm dying. I need you to come to this cabin in the woods. And they show up, and she's lost all the weight. And she's, like, basically going on this, like, journey of, like, releasing who she is. And she comes to find that her friends were maybe not the greatest people. And so, like, it's this really amazing, like... heart. I related to it as a woman that, like, struggles with her weight. You always think about, like, what would happen to my life and my friends if it was just gone overnight. And so that was great. But there's, I mean, it's definitely campy, and there's some, like, weird plot holes in it.
Yeah.
But, like, it was you walk away from it and you're like, okay, I might watch that again. I don't hate it.
Yeah, I love that campy film space. And, you know, I think, do they call it campy because of how many of those films had to do with camps? Originally,
I have no idea. I've never looked into that.
There's a lot. I don't know. I just it was just a thought I had suddenly. But there's a lot of kind of films that have to do with, like, a camp space that are kind of in that. I feel like they should come with a sound effect. Wah wah. Like, they're just like they're films that just are, and they're fun to consume.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So campy, extremely amusing. It says, like, found primarily in television, theater, motion pictures, camp adventures, or yeah. So I guess it's based on camp. Did you ever see the movie Camp with Anna Kendrick one? And yeah, kind of like they were in a play at camp, and there was, like, all kinds of, like, Anna Kendrick was young, but there was all kinds of, like, people coming out and realizing, like, gender identity and sexual preference.
I did
and
see that film.
I thought it was actually really good.
I'd forgotten forgotten that film was a thing. I think that's part of what I think of these oddball films as. They're almost less that they're particularly odd, because what isn't odd now that does well?
Yeah.
But it's almost now it's like, oh, that's a thing I forgot about that kind of was interesting. So, yeah, that's definitely one of those things for me, is that particular movie. I remember thinking, oh, this is interesting. And I remember also thinking, man, this is kind of like Hair, the old musical, but, like, now and weird, how strange that this would be a thing again.
I remember sitting, the first time I saw it, I was probably 13 maybe. And it was, like, so scandalous. And I remember, like, and it's really not, it's like a PG-13 or whatever. But they have, like, you know, kids in their teens, like, kissing and, like, dealing with, like, gender identity and sexuality and all of that. So at the time, it was very risque to me. And I just remember sitting in my room. We had, like, cable at the time, and watching it on HBO or, like, Showtime or one of those, and just being, like, keeping the TV low, and, like, I felt like I was doing something wrong watching this movie. And yeah, it was just great.
There was, speaking of campish, camp themed things, not just campish things, there was a TV show that was on long, long ago that was called Bug Juice, that was a Disney channel.
Bug Juice doesn't come in a jar, and Bug Juice comes from
It was a Disney Channel reality TV
that
show.
Theme song, though.
Where they followed a bunch of kids to camp.
Oh my
Spoilers,
God.
Sometimes they got to consume bug juice, which is what they call, like, fruit juice with, like, a whole lot of sugar in it at camp situations.
I loved Bug Juice.
My younger brother and I would watch that show with a level of consistency that is only used by the most prominent content creators. I mean,
yes,
it was like we were there.
Okay, I'm about to blow your mind.
Okay,
that only ran for two seasons.
Yeah, I don't find that surprising, really, but But like, childhood, but no, like, childhood always feels really extended to me anyway. But yeah.
Yeah. To me, I feel like I watched that show for years. Mm-hmm. And I probably did. I was just watching the same episodes. But like, oh my God. And it made me want to go to camp so bad.
Yeah.
And like, I wanted that like quintessential like camp experience with color war and like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I sucked at camp. I was really bad at camp. Were you? I got sent home. Yeah. I got sent home at 15. I was trying to be a camp counselor and like maternal instinct was not there. And they like literally called my mom to come pick me up. But also, I maintain that they made the mistake. I was 15. They let me in 2 years early for like CIT, which is like counselor in training.
Oh.
They let me in 2 years early and then they put me in a cabin with girls that are like 12. So I was only like a little bit older. And so I was becoming friends with these campers and then, you know, mistakes were made and I got sent home.
So my
dreams of bug juice was dashed.
Yeah, this is the other podcast dashed. Where it's Dana's camp stories. It's very, nope. Yeah, it's very not.
It was, but it was like devastating to me and I had it in my head. I was like, we're going to go to camp and it's going to be just like bug juice.
And it wasn't.
And
it wasn't
we're gonna just play like pranks. And it was not like, it was like that poor girl that gets sent home from bug juice because that's what happened.
since we're into,
and there was no theme song.
Since we're into the camp discussion, I once went to camp. In fact, actually, speaking of camp and singing and things, the first time I ever took a stage to sing publicly was at a camp.
I love it.
I played, there's an old theater piece, it's a musical called A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. And
oh God.
It's one of those, like, if you know theater world, it's one of those three entry point shows. So there's like a show and there's an entry point in the front and there's two entry points off to the side and hijinks happen because one of them's the door to this house and to the other. And then they do a lot of like door, like almost slapstick level entry and exiting of buildings. And this was a common thing that happened in plays. It's a take on like a Roman play construct. Anyway, I played the matriarch who was but she was a little brassy and so she had she had this whole song that she sang about how she was gonna just take over things and she was gonna run this whole town. It was like a whole deal. Anyway,
that's kind of perfect. I'm not gonna lie.
it was really exciting for me because for me I wanted camp to be that like stand on a stage go and now I've never left camp. That's what's happened. YouTube is kind of like camp now. Like digital media.
VidCon's like camp.
VidCon is
like going to camp.
Let's take little minor moment to let you guys know. I don't know if we've officially said this on the pod, but we are definitely going to VidCon in Anaheim this year, you guys, just so you know. And I get the strong sense based on producer Dania's 10 cents on things that we're probably going to do some podcasting there. So if...
Oh, we have to. There's no way around it. If you are not
already following along with this podcast and its various social forms, if you're not already hitting the button that you want to get this thing downloading all the time from your iTunes, your Libsyn, if you are not Anchor talking, send us Anchor questions to ask strangers at VidCon. And send us Anchor questions to ask people we know at VidCon. Send us stuff and we will consider putting it on to the podcast.
And, I mean, honestly, it's kind of crazy, but, like, we're out of time.
Oh, wow.
Like, there are so many little weird corners of the internet that, like, naturally we would run out of time very quickly. but I do want to say, you know, from both of us, like, the people that are listening to this, we thank you so much. Like, we really love sitting down with you guys every week and just chatting about, you know, what our passion is, media and content and, like, all of that. And it's been a really fun experience. And like she said, you know, check out our Anchor. It's anchor.fm/ohiloveThatToo, or, you know, we're on all kinds of social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all the usuals. And you can totally be a part of the show. Send us a little clip. You know, you can also email us at ohiloveThatToo@gmail with a short video clip that we will then convert into audio and whatever. We'll do the back end. We want you on the show. And if you just can't get enough of us, feel free to check out our YouTube channels. Mm-hmm. I know Amara's got a wonderful channel where she does lifestyle as an adventure.
That's Amara in Seattle.
Yep. Amara in Seattle or not in Seattle or Amara in Seattle vlogs.
I have all those channels. You got it, girl.
I'm getting ready for VidCon. I got to be able to regurgitate this stuff.
And over here is Dania of Dania Aussie, who is doing is doing videos about life that is intentional, correct? That's where you are? Yeah, about life that's intentional.
So, yeah, we're going to wrap it up. We will see you next Wednesday with a new episode of Oh, I Love That Too.
I Love That Too. Bye. Yay. See you then.
Aww.